Welcome in the latest episode of the Five on the Floor podcast on the Five Reasons Sports Network. Make sure to check out fivereasonsports.com. Spell it out, F-I-V-E, reasonsports.com. We've got all the latest columns, articles, all for free, unlike the local papers down here. But also, we've got our merchandise, our YouTube channel with our new streaming shows, so make sure that you check that out too. And of course, on there, you're going to get all of the podcasts. So not just this podcast, but also 3 Yards Per Carry on the Dolphins and NFL, Five Rings Canes, Balls Cast, Light Skin Opinions, Shula Bowl Podcast, Fantasy on Five, and more. I want to tell you about one of the great sponsors of the Five Reasons Sports Network. If this is around lunchtime, you should definitely do this. It's Mr. M Sandwich Shop in Davie, right across from the Dolphins facility at Nova Southeastern. That's right there on University Drive. They've been serving South Florida since 1979 with Philly cheesesteaks, subs, wraps, and salads. Unlike the other guys, everything there is made fresh to order. And when you go inside, and yes, they are open, say hello to Paul and Jody. Tell them you heard this advertisement on the podcast. Here is what you want to do, though, if you can't get over there right away, but you want to order online, MrMsSubs.com. That's MrMsSubs.com. Use the discount code 5R for Five Reasons, and you'll get 15% off your entire online order. So again, that's Mr. M Sandwich Shops in Davie. They've also got a location in Hollywood. So check them out, MrMsSubs.com. And now, today's episode.
Welcome to Five on the Floor, a Miami Heat and NBA podcast from Ethan Skolnick with Alfon Sidney, a.k.a. Alf954. Brought to you by the Five Reasons Sports Network.
All right, Ethan Skolnick back here on Five on the Floor. No Alf, no Alex. They're both working during the day. Our other guy is working too here, but he's out on the West Coast in the Bay Area, in the Sacramento area. Sam Amick, obviously you can follow Sam on Twitter. Sam, you are with The Athletic now, correct?
I am indeed, Ethan. Yes, sir. Thanks for having me, friend.
For that. No problem. I have the subscription, so we appreciate all the good work that you guys are doing, and you definitely should check out The Athletic, get a subscription, not just for the Heat stuff, obviously down here. Andre Fernandez covers the Heat for them, but also for everything that's going on around the country. We brought Sam on a busy day, and we appreciate him doing this because there is actual news. We've been speculating on the podcast when the NBA would come back. It's been sort of Orlando for a while. We've had Keith Smith on the podcast. He kind of hatched this idea because he used to work for Disney. and suddenly it came to fruition. And then the reports today that this is actually official. I want to go over the plan with you here, Sam, how they got to it, but also a little bit how it's going to work, because I've talked to a bunch of agents over the past week, and they said their players weren't even really sure how it was going to work, that the entire membership hadn't been informed. It's 22 teams, so 8 teams are not involved. It's going to be in Orlando, Wide World of Sports Complex. They're using the Coronado Springs Resort as the main hub. They're going to play 8 games, I guess, get to 72 games. Is that right? What is the plan here for the regular season? And if you could explain to me how this play-in thing works, because I can't figure it out.
Thanks for having me, brother. It's good to hear your voice. It's been a while. Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I think that the 72 threshold I need clarity on, because right now what we have been hearing was that it was 8 games. But obviously not everybody is starting at the same starting point. You have the general idea from there being that any teams that are, you know, 4 games back or more of the 8th seed, you know, that then kind of brings to an end their season. And then you have the play-in component where, you know, the 9th seed has got to beat the 8th seed twice, I believe. It's a double elimination for the 8th seed with a little protection for them being ahead. You know, and then you've eventually pared down to your 8 teams. And within that, I mean, one of my curiosities is because so much of this is obviously financially driven, you know, the playoffs and their ability to air them will, and I reported last month that will put roughly $900 million back in their pocket. But the one moving target financially that I'm curious to see how it works is the RSN deals. You know, you got all these teams. Mm-hmm. So those 8 that are not part of this, conceivably now they leave all that money on the table. And for the listeners who aren't aware, that's the regional sports network TV contracts where each team has vastly different economics when it comes to what they get paid per RSN game. But that has been, you know, from everything I've heard, you know, like the second line item on the economic front. But this recoups some of that money for the teams that are involved. And then from there, you go into a 7-game playoff series. And, you know, it's going to be wild in the beginning because those 8 games, like somebody, I think my colleague Joe Varden had tweeted this, that he said it reminded him of the World Baseball Classic in that, like, it's going to go from 0 to 100 very quickly. And all 8 of those games are going to matter a lot. And that's partly what the league wanted here. They obviously chose against doing something more extreme, like a 30-team play-in tournament that would have been essentially March Madness for the NBA. But I think this will have shades of that, and if they can actually pull it off, it could be fun.
Yeah, and the RSNs, I think, is the thing that not a lot of people are talking about. I mean, I'd heard, and I believe, you know, you've heard, a lot of this is about television, right? I mean, that is where the primary, right, that's where the revenue comes from for the NBA. And so although there are altruistic reasons that the league wants to get back, a lot of this is, I mean, most of it is financially driven. It's just a question of, can you do it responsibly? I guess the thing with the play-in, and I was in favor of not going to 30. I mean, to me, you know, most of those 8 teams, look, this is one of the dangers of coming into a season. I guess it's unforeseen danger, but of coming into a season and not really trying to win. I mean, some of those teams came into this year, you know, playing for ping pong balls. And so, you know, they didn't have a chance to get in the mix anyway. I guess, you know, if you're the 10th team in the Eastern Conference, you could have a little bit of a beef because you could say, okay, you know, Charlotte's a game behind Washington, right? So I guess
they
would be the one team potentially with a beef. But otherwise, I'm fine with it. I would have been fine, honestly, if the money wasn't involved with just going to 16. I would have been fine with going 1-16 and reseeding. And the other thing that I would be fine with, and I want to ask you this question now that we know that we're going to 22, I mean, some of these teams played all year to get home court. I mean, in Milwaukee's case, they played all year to get number one in the league. The Lakers, number one in the West. You know, the Heat to finish fourth. You know, we're trying to finish fourth to get home court, where they were outstanding this year. They were terrible on the road, or mediocre on the road, ahead of Indianapolis, you know, Indiana and Philadelphia. I have a proposal for how you reward the home teams, which is, I think you just reseed after every round like the NHL does, because there's no reason not to now that, you know, one of the reasons you didn't receive
travel's was
not
an issue.
Right. Yeah. Travel's not an issue. So you don't have to send the scouts. I mean, basically everybody's there anyway. I mean, in summer league, you know, that's not a concern. That's not a concern here. But others are suggesting more drastic measures. I heard one, you know, starting at 1-0 in a playoff series or giving extra possessions. I'm not in favor of doing anything that changes the nature of the game. But I am okay with changing the nature of the seeding. Have you heard anything about how they're going to reward a Milwaukee or a Lakers or a Clippers or a Toronto for being better than everybody else this season?
I haven't. I wish I had something to offer there other than, you know, and just giving credit where credit's due. What I read from Dave McMenamin at ESPN, he wrote a piece that had some pretty fascinating, as he described, Hail Marys that these top seeds had been throwing, trying to get advantages, you know, the higher seeded team being awarded the first possession of the last 3 quarters. And I'm looking at it here. The higher seeded team being allowed to designate one player to be able to be whistled for 7 fouls instead of 6. I mean, I sure across the whole spectrum of this thing, I sure hope they at least throw some of this stuff against the wall, because they're never going to replicate this sort of an environment in terms of, you know, having full clearance to try almost anything. Because in the past, and again in the future, what you run into is dogma. You run into the traditionalists who tell you that that's not acceptable and that's not okay. And I think this is a moment in time where, you know, not everything is on the table, but almost everything I think should be. So I hope we have some outside the box thinking.
Yeah, I'm for the outside the box thinking. My concern is this: you're going to have people who claim asterisks either way, right?
Sure.
So if you don't give an advantage to the home teams, and then you have Devin Booker goes on a 6-week tear, and a team in Philly Phoenix that probably wasn't going to make the playoffs because all the circumstances have changed now suddenly ends up in the NBA Finals. There's going to be a huge asterisk on that. There's nothing you can do about that. And it's going to be, well, it would have been Milwaukee and the Lakers if everything was normal. But at the same time, I think if you do too much tinkering to the nature of gameplay, I'm not talking about to seeding and to some other things maybe off the court, but to the nature of gameplay, the asterisk comes in the other direction.
Right.
So I'm okay with tinkering, but I think you've got to be extraordinarily careful. One more thing kind of on the structure here, and then I want to get into who you think this benefits.
Interject super fast, Ethan, I'm going to rudely interrupt and just piggyback on what you said. I mean, I feel like since so much of your career was spent, you know, being very close to the one and only LeBron James, I mean, I think we need to test the limits of LeBron's powers and maybe have him switch teams halfway through the game and see, does everything shift, you know?
that was Bukers' old idea. Well, Sam, that was Bukers' old idea that LeBron should switch teams every offseason if he could take a team to, and I actually thought it was a good idea. Could you take the Sixers team that was tanking, throw LeBron on it and somehow get in the playoffs? I think we saw last year with the Lakers that there is a limit to that, but I think there are creative things you could do. There are fun things you can do, but if you've decided you're going to have a real season, if you're going to play with seeds and you're going to play some of the rest of the regular season, you're going to play 4 out of 7 series, which at some point I heard it was going to be 2 out of 3 until the finals. So if you're going to play 4 out of 7, then you've decided you're having a real season. And if you've decided you're having a real season or as close to it as you can, then I think it's harder to throw some stuff at the wall. I think some of the things Silver was talking about before, maybe we'll just have a tournament. Then it's like, yeah, do it like old the Zoe's Summer Groove down here where you've got 10-point shots. Okay, then. But I think if you're going to play something that's close to a season, I think you try to get it as close as possible. A couple more things here about logistics, and then I want to get to who you think benefits from this. In talking to Keith Smith and others, and he knows those properties as well as anybody, it looks like Coronado Springs is going to be the hub. It looks like they'll try to play 2 games sort of at 2 different gyms to get the regular season games in. What are you hearing? Because one of the things when I've talked to agents is there's big concerns about, you know, how limited the players are going to be about having families around. Some of these star players have entourages. I mean, they're not just hangers-on. They're legitimate people. They're trainers. They're
associates.
Others.
Yeah.
Associates. LeBron has, you know, a bunch of them, as we know. Others have them. I mean, Jimmy has some. I mean, the star players have them. How have you heard they're going to handle all of that?
It's a point of contention for sure right now, because the early message from the league was that that they would not even be allowing families in during the regular season portion, and it wouldn't be until the playoffs. And, you know, I kind of feel like good luck with that. I think they're going to get a lot of pushback from players. And at the end of the day, the players certainly have leverage here, where you got to get their buy-in. And certainly to this point, the NBPA and the NBA seem to have been in concert for the most part on the evolution of these plans. But that is that's fluid. And I think the question of people beyond family, my early sense, even as somebody who has been navigating access issues, you know, I'm a member of the PBWA, the Basketball Writers Association board. I can't share everything, but I would say that my early sense is that it's going to be incredibly tight, and it's going to be it's far less loose on the inside of the bubble than I anticipated. I was very surprised to hear some things about kind of the way that would function. Now, listen, the players are, I think, unquestionably going to have, if it's not their own set of rules, it's something like that. So I think you're going to have 2 versions of the bubble, if not more. But the family thing, they want to be, for obvious reasons, incredibly serious and smart about the medical aspect here. I think we are, even in the excitement to debate the new playoff format, the whole discussion has quickly veered, at least temporarily, away from the medicine and the coronavirus and the idea that, you know, we can't lose sight of the fact the NBA is going to go through this entire experience just wanting to wind up on the right side of history. They know that if this thing goes south from a health standpoint in any form or fashion, then the history book is going to tell people that Adam Silver and his group, you know, they went and tried to recoup a bunch of their revenue and it didn't end well. So all of that is to say that the family stuff, the associates, the friends, I don't think they're going to allow the circle to be that large. And I'm not sure some of those people beyond the family would even want to be there from a lifestyle standpoint, because I think it's going to be fairly restrictive.
Yeah, I'm not that surprised at that. And I know, obviously, you handle a lot of those media issues, and I'm not surprised with you saying that also, because that's kind of what I anticipated there. I want to get to some of the ramifications of this particular team. Before we do, I want to tell you about the second sponsor of today's podcast, and that's Christopher's Bakery. You can find them on Twitter at Nilla Wafer Cakes. That's N-I-L-L Wafer Cakes. That's on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. They're named after the brother of Courtney Harris, who's actually appeared on this podcast, who died of a seizure at 11 years old. They partnered with Miami Nicklaus Children's Hospital and set up a fund where they donate a portion of all the sales to epilepsy and neuroscience research, since that's where Christopher spent much of his life. The signature product, I've had it. I'm ordering another one. It's a vanilla wafer cake. You can get the chocolate chips in it too. It's created over 30 years ago. It's delicious. My daughter ate the second half of it, so I'm getting another one. But they've got other cake options available for shipping as well, and they do deliver to South Florida and all around the country. And after COVID, they'll resume hand delivery once the whole ordeal passes. If it passes, we hope so. There's a website page that you can go to directly for 5 reasons. It's Christopher's Bakery. That's Christopher's Bakery.com/5reasons. Use the coupon code 5reasons, spell it out, F-I-V-E, reasons, and you get 15%. Off your entire order. So it's christophersbakery.com/5reasons. All right, let's get to the basketball aspect of this. And I have said, people are talking about an asterisk, and here's why I don't think there should be an asterisk. To me, this, and you go back to the 2011 season, you go back to the 99 season. To me, this is the truest test of an organization's greatness that you're going to have, because, and of a coach on each particular team, because you have guys with long layoffs who got involved in a whole bunch of other things when they were out of basketball, obviously, because this is not routine for their bodies, for their lives, for their families, or anything. They're coming back. You're going to see on the first day of training camp what you have and what you don't have. Okay. And you're going to have to adjust to this, get these guys motivated and ready to go, get them to play in an environment that is totally different for them, not just being in this bubble in Orlando, again, away from a lot of the people that they care about, but also playing in front of no fans. It's totally different. And so when people say this isn't going to be a real season, to me, this is going to be the truest test. This is where, if you've claimed that you, and I cover one of these teams, if you've claimed you have a culture like a Miami, like a San Antonio, like a Toronto, like some of those organizations, this right. is a test of it. And I think that in a lot of cases, the good organizations, the ones who had good leadership among their players, who their players kept connected, or they did the Zoom videos for fitness and they gave their players programs and their players stuck to it and they have a coach who can put it together. This is going to prove who's an elite organization in the league. Am I wrong?
No, I think there's sheds of truth with that, or you know, to an extent. I mean, the first reaction for me is, you know, I talked to a GM last week who it was fascinating, because it was from a high level organization, the type that at least in modern day is doing things the right way. And they were putting a lot of water on the idea that, you know, that the preparation during the interim period would ultimately play a significant part. Now, I think now is when you start seeing the functionality of these organizations, the plan to ramp things up for each of these guys individually, because they're still not going to have team workouts for quite some time. That's the other revelation here, is I do not anticipate, just handicapping it, but I don't anticipate in-market full team practices ever before they go to Orlando. Mm-hmm. And that's going to make it hard. Mm-hmm. But yes, getting all of these moving pieces, whether it's, you know, bodies that are out of shape, maybe guys who went too hard on the training side, maybe they were trying to keep up too much and they need to get back to a basketball body. That's not going to be easy. The only thing for me that it's not a matter of it being an asterisk, I think that something in between is that, you know, it's so fascinating how some of these players and these teams are going to simply be in different places health-wise now than they would have been if the season had continued. And Portland is the poster boy, so to speak, for that. You know, they're sitting here as this team that messed around all year, had tons of injuries, but also didn't play very well, was out of the playoff picture. They're going to be included here. Well, guess what? Now you get Zach Collins back. Now you get Yusuf Nurkic back. I mean, they're an entirely different team than they were before, and that you could argue as a rival that that's an unfair advantage. And so there's going to be little pockets where it would have shades of asterisks. Like, let's say Portland just goes on a run and wipes out some big boys at some point along the way. You know, then this would be something that we talk about. And it just, there's no way around that. What are you going to do? Say, right. You know, hey, Zach and Yusuf, like, since you weren't healthy in mid-March, you got to stay on the sideline. You're not going to do that. So it is what it is.
I would look at, you mentioned Portland. I think that's a great example. I think the two in the East that strike me would be Philadelphia and Indiana. Philadelphia, I mean, when the season ended, Simmons and Embiid were not there, or not right. healthy together. And, you know, my only concern with Philadelphia is I don't know that the culture there is such, and we'll see when they all come back. But the other thing is Indiana was having a hard time kind of integrating Oladipo and Brogdon after, you know, them both being out for so long. I think this is potentially, you know, beneficial for them. I think another team in the East that it helps is the Heat. The Heat were banged up and not playing particularly well before the break. They blew a 30-point lead to Charlotte the last game at home, where they'd been dominant. But, you know, Myers Leonard was out, and he was a big piece of what they were doing. They were still trying to integrate Iguodala, Crowder, you know, and the like. And so I think that it could potentially help them, except I think the thing that hurts them is, again, and Philadelphia was the same way, they had this incredible home road split. And so that's basically wiped out because the Heat were playing for home court. Is there a team that you think that this hurts? A team that was maybe playing well or rolling, but by the nature of their roster or anything else that's happened, that this is actually a potential disadvantage for them?
I mean, the Lakers come to mind first just because they were playing really well. And anytime you're LeBron's age and LeBron's kind of shelf life in terms of years in the league and miles, you know, this is a unique challenge for him. Now, LeBron being LeBron, I'll probably laugh that I even said that by the time he gets back out there, and he'll probably look great and they'll be good. But they were rolling, and the Clippers too, you know what I mean? And so I think the top teams and then what they had going are not aided by this break. But beyond that, I mean, everybody's had a chance to rest up. And then you're talking about chemistry things. You're talking about momentum within the scope of the season. I'm sitting here looking at the standings, trying to think of who else comes to mind. I mean,
well, Milwaukee, you know, jumped out to me too, for the same reason as, well, they were rolling, but also we always hear about how older players take longer to get in shape. And so that Milwaukee team has a lot of professionals, but also some older bodies there. I mean, I'm never going to question Kyle Korver's conditioning. He's a freak about it. But it's just like there are certain guys on that team, Korver, Hill, the Lopez's. There's a little bit more age on that team than maybe even a Toronto. Then, you know, the Lakers obviously, you know, have some age on their team, but maybe more than a Toronto, maybe more than a Clippers. To me, the other team, I think that of the top teams, I think the team that's most advantaged by this is the Clippers, because they basically were load managing the whole season, or they might have been the one seed. Well, they just load managed for 3 months. And now I'm assuming Kawhi and Paul George are going to play together all the time. So, right. And they, you know, they were pretty dominant when that happened. I look at them as a possible positive. The other one I look at is, I mean, James Harden looks like he's lost 30 pounds. I don't know if that's good or bad or what, but they may look a little bit different too. I think Houston is, you know, could be a factor potentially.
Yeah, James looks good. And I hadn't thought of this till you mentioned how much weight he lost. And I'm just speculating here, but man, it's hard not to assume that there's probably a tie in there to the you know, they go all in with their roster on, you know, nothing but wings and playing centerless basketball. And they do that Capella trade with Atlanta and get Robert Covington. But sorry, let me clear my throat there.
Sure.
But my thing with James is, a lot of times his heft and his strength, because people don't understand, he's an extremely strong dude. But he was a post defender in their scheme for a lot of these years. And that was always the one Rockets kind of propaganda, you know, thing they would throw out there is, well, okay, he's not great on the wings, but he's one of the best post defenders in the league. And so I think it's probably safe to assume that he now doesn't feel the need to have that kind of a frame. And so what does that look like? Because in the past, we have had major, you know, debates and with good reason about James and his stamina, James and his ability to get to the end of the playoffs. And even without the weight loss, I would say that it's a positive for James Harden because, you know, he has learned the hard way several times that when you want to carry your whole entire team during the entire regular season, maybe chasing things like MVPs, then you can't make it to the end of the playoff finish line. So a fresh James Harden, I think, certainly helps the Rockets. Same thing for Russell Westbrook.
Yep.
The one team that we didn't mention that I think is in its own lane and is super interesting is Utah for a couple of reasons. For one, and correct me if I'm, and I'll get to this is the non, you know, provocative stuff first, but Bojan Bogdanović, I'm confusing my Bogdanovic's. Mm-hmm. Do you remember the details of when he actually got hurt?
Because I don't know when he got hurt. Right. Yeah. But he decided to have surgery in the offseason. And I don't know if that was elective or not elective, but I don't remember the circumstances. But yeah, that's been underplayed. I mean, he was averaging 20 a game.
Right.
And I mean, a big piece in terms of the shooting that they need. And you're right. I mean, he's really the only one, I think, and you know, and obviously the Gobert Mitchell thing, but I mean, I figure they'll figure that out. But at least to get through this season, but
sure.
Yeah, but that one is interesting. I don't know of any other players other than him that went from, you know, healthy to all of a sudden out during this. Whereas there may be some who pull a hamstring in the first week, they're back. I think that's very possible, but there isn't anybody else like that. Everybody else has gone
Worried about Jared Dudley. I'm worried about Jared Dudley.
Well, yeah, I would think so. I was worried about Jokic too, but he looks better than I anticipated. So
What did Mike Malone say? He made some crack about it. If you see a 6'11 assassin out there, it might be Nikola Jokic. Apparently he's in pretty good shape.
Yeah, which is stunning, and we'll see how he plays that. But that's an interesting one. Right, last thing here for Sam, because I know you got stuff to get to. We haven't talked about it at all here, but obviously, and we did an entire podcast on that this week. The what's going on with George Floyd and the protests, and obviously the NBA's role in it. We've seen some current players, Jaylen Brown, obviously Malcolm Brogdon, others, Udonis Haslam down here, who've spoken out. I've made the case that the NBA is important in a time like this because they have strong voices that are listened to, and this obviously. This league is going to be watched very, very closely, and the ratings are going to be through the roof. And if you want to make a statement, you can make a statement. But my question, do you think there are any players that will just say, I'm not playing, either because of COVID or because of what's going on in the country right now? Do you think we'll have any walkouts from their teams?
I mean, I currently have no reason to think that's the case. You know, the concerns on the COVID front, at least in my conversations have been minimal. There have been some, but it's typically at least eventually followed by a willingness to trust the NBPA and then trust the individual organizations. In fact, you know, we had Joe Ingles of the Jazz on our podcast a couple months ago, and he made comment that made headlines about how he would leave the NBA, go back to Australia if it meant that he was putting his family in danger. And he has an autistic son. Whose you know, immune system is compromised. But even Joe since then has publicly tweeted about how he trusts the Jazz. And so I don't have any reason to think that would be the case. But it is, I mean, as if Adam Silver's job wasn't challenging enough already with the coronavirus situation, you know, you now need to strike the right chords on that front. You now need to convince everybody that you're being healthy and this is not a reckless, selfish money grab. That, you know, you can get through this without endangering human lives. And then you also need to honor human life of George Floyd and everything that represents during this process. And so it's another layer to it. And one that Adam and the league, I mean, especially on social issues, they've got a fantastic track record, and I'm sure they'll find a way to do it the right way.
Yeah, and I've already heard, and I'm sure you probably have too, that some of the players are already thinking of some of the things they can do in an organized fashion, same way that, you know, the I Can't Breathe, and I guess it was 2014, I guess it would have been, with Jarrett Jack and LeBron, and obviously the Kobe shirt that's going around these days, you know, that I would anticipate they will do something. I've just said, you know, repeatedly, if there's any sports entity in the world that can handle these two things, it's this one. I don't know that any can, but if there is any that can actually do it in a positive, responsible way and be taken seriously, unlike what, you know, the NFL put out about social justice this past week, and, you know, they got ratioed on Twitter. This league will not get ratioed on Twitter. I mean,
How about that Redskins tweet, huh?
Oh, my God. Well, Sam, not just the Redskins tweet, but I'm a lifelong Islander fan, and I thought the Islanders, not that I want to be ranking statements, but of all the statements that were put out by any of the teams, the Islanders was the most tone deaf, and so I'm reconsidering 35 years of fandom. But the Knicks. There's always the Knicks, and that was my other team. That was my other team growing up.
Spurs got off the hook too, man. It's so interesting how, I mean, because you got Greg Popovich, he makes he did an interview with Dave Zirin and was outspoken. And yes, he is the face of the Spurs, but it always kind of bothers me how they take advantage of that, because on the back end, when it comes to ownership, and they are, you know, very widely known Trump supporters in that organization in terms of ownership and the whole family, they didn't say anything. So that was a little troubling.
Well, the same happened down here with the Dolphins, who are a contradiction in terms, because their owner, you know, runs the Rise Foundation, which does tremendous work in this area. And he also has right now the best track record in the NFL in terms of promoting high-level black executives and the head coach, and the entire front office, basically, as well as the head coach. But of course, you know, hosted a fundraiser for Trump that didn't go over very well with players and others. And so, you know, they had Brian Flores, the coach, give the statement, which was an outstanding statement, but that was the Dolphins statement. It was from Brian Flores. So I think some of these teams are at least smart enough to recognize who is the appropriate person to put out there.
Sure.
And some of these teams are the Redskins and the Knicks. And that's just, and
I just, you know,
they're owned by Dolan and Snyder. So what are you going
to
do?
If Dolan was a smarter man, he should have just given his Twitter account to Spike Lee and let it go there.
or Charles Oakley, Sam. Either I would have rather have seen Oakley.
I know, but they owe both those guys something. But Spike's the face of the Knicks, the true face of the Knicks.
Whether he wants to be or not. Yeah, exactly.
In true spirit of the times, I turned on Malcolm X the other day and starting to get through, you know, the old Spike joint. But James just keeps stepping in it.
Yeah, I watched Do the Right Thing the other day, so it's we're all kind of in that space. Sam Amick, follow him at The Athletic. Subscribe, okay? I don't tell you guys to subscribe to pretty much anything else these days. Subscribe to The Athletic; it's worth it, and also helps out our local guys here, Andre and Manny and Chris Perkins, and some of the other guys who work here in South Florida. Sam, really appreciate you doing this.
You got it, Ethan. Good to hear from you, man. Stay safe.
Thank you for listening to the Five on the Floor on the Five Regional Sports Network.